I am Susan Young. I'm the chair of the Pacifica National Board. This is the teleconference board meeting of August 7th, 2025. We are starting a little late. It's supposed to be 8:30 Eastern time. We're 8:35. Will the secretary please call the roll?
You bet. Kodja Brown? I'll keep going. Donna Carter?
Present.
Thank you, Donna. Fred Dodsworth. Fred asked for an excused absence. Jerome Edge. I'll keep going. Sally Gellert. Oh, Sally will on a moment ago.
I'm here.
Oh, thank you. Gotcha. Sure. Appreciate it, Sally. Jan Goodman. Jan?
I think she's on the phone call.
Okay. All right. I'll come back. Julie Hewitt, I am here. Avalia Jones?
I'm here.
Thank you, Avalia. Zach Caldvier?
Here.
Thank you, Zach. Philip Muldry?
Here.
Thank you, Philip. Marianne Martinez?
Here.
Thank you, Marianne. Sean Kelly McPherson?
I am.
Thank you, Sean. Ron Pinchback?
Here.
Thank you, Ron. Myla Reason?
I'm here.
Thank you, Myla. Serene Roberts?
Present.
Thank you, Serene. James Sagerton?
Here.
Thank you, James. Minerva Sanders?
Present.
Thank you, Minerva. Alex Steinberg? Keep going. Harvey Wasserman? I'll keep going. Dennis Williams?
I'm here. Harvey's coming. I have to send him another link.
Okay. Dennis,
and
thank
I'm here.
You.
I didn't answer when you called me, but I'm here. Jan.
I am marking Jan present as well. Thank you. Michael Woodson.
I'm here.
Thank you, Michael. Susan Young.
Here.
All right. Let me go back up to the top. Has Kodja Brown joined us? Has Jerome Edge joined us? How about Alex Steinberg? Harvey Wasserman?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Gotcha, Harvey. Thank you. Let me call on the others and, you know, if the other directors join later, we'll make note of their presence. But, Stephanie Wells?
Here.
Thank you, Stephanie. Aki Tanaka?
I'm here.
Thank you, Aki. And Darlene Pagano's timekeeper.
Here.
Thank you, Darlene. Madam Chair, we have quorum.
Great. Okay, the next item is report out from the July 10th meeting. The PND met in executive session to consider a disciplinary matter and approved a motion to hold an executive session hearing on the disciplinary matter on August 14, 2025. Next is excused absences. Is there any objection to excusing absence? Hearing none, it's excused. Agenda approval for the open portion of the agenda. Minutes for approval, July 10. Standing committee, that's 5 minutes. Standing committee reports, 15. Audit, coordinating, finance, governance. Affiliates report, 10 minutes. Discussion on whether disciplinary hearings can be held in open session, 10 minutes. Executive director report, 20 minutes. Old business, 10. It's a non-disclosure agreement, amended version. New business, number 9, 15 minutes. And that is a Sally Gellert motion. And motion to move into closed session at a time no later than 10 p.m. Eastern time. Is there any objection to the agenda?
Madam Chair, I just have a minor tweak.
Sure.
I think we should be calling old business unfinished business.
Unfinished business. Yeah, any objection to correcting that? You're absolutely right. We need to take the secretary to task. Okay. Next up is... minutes approval for July 10. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Myla.
Okay. Myla, is there a second?
This is Minerva. There's a second. I am seconding.
Great. Is there any objection to approving the minutes for July 10th?
I just want to,
sorry. Yes.
I just want to abstain. I haven't had a chance to read them. Thanks.
So are you abstaining for now?
Yes, I'd like to abstain.
Great. Okay. So let the record reflect that. Standing committee reports. Audit committee, it's Minerva, and also I think that the executive director has information. Minerva.
At this time, we do not have an actual audit committee report. We have the information that the executive director had provided regarding information for the audit committee and how we should work and be set up. And we're looking to schedule a time to meet and talk about that information. So that's where we stand right now.
Any questions on the Stephanie, would you mind just at this moment giving us an update on the timing of the audit?
The accounting firm is working on it as we speak, both for 22 and 23. They have the information that we have provided them. When they have questions on anything, they'll forward us a list of more information that they need. But right now we're focusing on getting answers and finalizing the taxes for 2023 and 2024.
Okay. Coordinating committee. The committee has not been meeting. There is no report. Finance committee. Fred. Oh, sorry. Myla. You're muted.
Sorry about that. Stephanie, I was just wondering, so you said that you're still working on getting the taxes filed for 2024 prior to being able to provide them to the auditors. Is that correct?
The auditing firm works on the taxes and also the audit. So they're working on those simultaneously. I've already received the first draft of the this is in the ED report, but I've already received the first draft of the 990, the California 199, RRF1, and the New York State Form Char 500 for fiscal year 23. So those have been, I have those already. But there's a couple of revisions that they requested. So we're working in coordination with the National Business Manager and the division that needs to provide us with those updated numbers, and then they'll be filed.
And then what's the status for 24?
Then they'll start working on the 24 taxes. But all of this happens simultaneously with the audit. So since the 2022 taxes have already been filed, the 2023 taxes are 99.9% done. They're, again, just confirmation from one of our stations on something. Then that information, the other section of the team within the auditors are working on the audited financial statements.
Serene, you have a question.
Stephanie, can you identify the Texas filing?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The Texas filing. You said they're working on the New York form, the California form. Which one is the Texas form?
There isn't a Texas form. I probably said taxes.
No, well, you said working on the one, did you say the 199 for
It's IRS California. It's IRS 990. California has two forms, the 199, which is the tax form, and then the RRF, which is the annual registration renewal fee report. And then we file every year the New York State Form Char 500, which is the annual filing for charitable organizations.
And there's no requirement for us to file anything in the state of Texas?
We have forms that we file that aren't taxes, but we register with the state Secretary of State's office at each state where we can possibly receive funds from or donations from, and that's completely separate. That's a form we fill out, and I just do that on my own. We don't go through accountants for that, and that's just a state registration fee that says we have donors in that state.
Okay, thanks.
A question, Stephanie. There have been some questions about whether we're up against deadlines and whether there's a possibility of incurring penalties. I understand that we have requested extensions that are permitted and that they are timely. Is that correct?
Yes. The auditing firm and the accountants file extensions for us on behalf, you know, knowing how long it will take to get the taxes done. There isn't anything that we are behind or fines that we have paid that I am aware of to this point. There were questions that were brought up and in an email by someone on the NFC, I believe, a couple days ago, and then brought up again today. And so just to be on the safe side, I forwarded those to one of our auditors and said, you know, these are some of the questions that have been raised. Are we behind? Is there any fees? That kind of thing. And I haven't gotten a reply from them yet, but I'm, as soon as I get a reply, I will respond to that email with those replies.
Okay. The Finance Committee report. We don't have Fred here, but we have several members of the Finance Committee, and we also have one scheduled for Tuesday, and we're hoping to cover possibly a KPFK financial update and the affiliates update. Stephanie, can you tell us where we stand on those?
Do we have people from the affiliates here?
No. And it would be good if we texted them or hunted them down or whatever, because we've got an affiliates report tonight too. And I think it's important. Go ahead, Stephanie, about preps for Tuesday's NFC meeting.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you would ask me to report on the affiliates. Yes, at the National Finance Committee meeting on Tuesday that's coming up, will be what we've been reviewing is the revenue and expenses to date. And I think what's been a little confusing to people on the committee is that while we fill out these the spreadsheets that have the revenue and expenses to date, those are really for the National Finance Committee to take a look at it and see where we are. Are the state, is that particular station or division that we're looking at on track? Is everything coming in as expected? Is the expenses up too high? Have they lessened? That kind of thing. So it's just kind of reviewing where we are to date. We then also, because of keeping those columns active, we have at the very end of the spreadsheet a living column that keeps changing, which is the projected budget. It isn't necessarily the actual budget for next year or the projected budget for next year, but it's the starting point when we compile all those budgets, and it's automatically tallied based upon how we're filling in those columns. So what the, making it long story longer, is that what we've been doing in the National Finance Committee is reviewing all the divisions to see where they are to date. We got in a little bit of a snafu with KPFT's budget because there were some changes with bringing in a general manager and the possibility of then going from a volunteer to a paid position. So then that kind of got our schedule off track. But this Tuesday we'll be reviewing the finances to date for KPFK and the affiliates. And those should be sent out to the committee within the next couple of days. And so hopefully by tomorrow, I reviewed the KPFK to date through June today. And then the affiliates should be sending it to me also by tomorrow. Then we'll send that out to the National Finance Committee. And since we have reviewed the stations and the day, the payable, the revenue and the expenses are being plugged in on a regular basis, we'll then be able to work with the general managers or the business managers and the national business manager to be able to create the budgets for the next fiscal year. And we'll be reviewing those in September with the National Finance Committee to review and approve.
Myla.
Thanks, Stephanie. You may know, and I don't know if we actually passed a rule about it, but I believe that we came to an understanding with you and the National Finance Committee that we really need to have the numbers that we're going to be looking at in a week in advance. And now it looks like that's not going to happen for our review of KPFK finances. And I'm a little disappointed because it really doesn't give members adequate time to to know what, to analyze the numbers and figure out what questions they're going to be asking. And this will be our first opportunity, I believe, to actually have the manager of KPFK with us for the meeting. So
And that was actually, that was actually my recommendation to give everything to everybody 1 week in advance. And the numbers that we had for KPFK were only through March. And so I sent it back to update it because when we first got those numbers, it was when we were going to be looking at KPFK's numbers last month at the last meeting. And then again, we got messed up with the schedule, because we canceled the KPFT. So I sent it back yesterday and asked for the income to go through June. So we have the income statement for KPFK and WPFW, even though we're not reviewing WPFW, we're adding those up to June. And then we've entered healthcare and central services for both. And now it's just back in the hands of Markeisha and Efren to finalize it in the spreadsheet. So as I said, I saw the numbers today, and that's why I'm hoping that they'll be able to plug all of those in, and we'll have something for you tomorrow. So it's, again, not a week in advance, and I apologize for that, but it is 4 days in advance.
Thanks.
Donna. Donna.
Okay. I looked over your report, Stephanie, and I noted that Pacifica has a $1.2 million bank account, and I'm wondering if that wouldn't be, there might not be enough money there to hire someone to do the financials on a regular basis.
So this actually probably belongs in the ED report because it's a financial matter. Stephanie, would you mind addressing that in the framework of NFC? Let me just say that I know that KPFT has a balance, and I imagine other stations do. So those, I think a priority call on them is what stations need. Stephanie, could you address the question?
Yes, the bank balances that are listed in the ED report, shows each division and what their balance is. So we don't dig into, KPFK got a large bequest, so their bank balance is fairly large right now. We would not, as the national office, dig into their account to pay for additional staffing for something. We would use, all of this money, even though we're all part of the Pacifica Foundation, it belongs to each of these units. So as we look at each of those divisions, if there is an opportunity for KPFK, for example, I'm just using them as an example, that they want to use some of their funds that were donated to them to hire a business manager for their office, that would be up to them to make that decision, but we would never pull into those accounts. Even though we look at it and we say, oh, all the bank balances together are $1.1 million, it's not for the national office to determine how we are going to use that. These funds belong to those stations to make sure that they are self-sustaining and to cover their own bills.
Serene.
At one point there was talk, Stephanie, of sending invoices to each unit each month so there would never be a question, about what people were paying when they sent in their monthly payments, their central services and whatever else those assessments might be. Where are we on that?
Also in the ED report, but there's, with that bank balance, it also shows the central service payments that were paid that past month. And every station is paying their full central service payments. Not every station. KPFK isn't paying their full amount, and WBAI is not paying their full amount. So they get bills sent to them, knowing when there's the when we send out every 2 weeks reminders of how much is necessary for payroll for that upcoming pay period. And during that, in that invoice or email that they get, it states how much is due for payroll, how much is a part of that is for also health benefits, any, and then also in that same email is what is due for essential services. If a station
let me just interrupt for a moment. Mm-hmm. I think the timekeeper is alerting us that we are about to be out of time on this item.
Yes.
Is there any objection to extending for, frankly, we've got both finance and governance for another 10 minutes? Hearing none, we're extending those for another 10 minutes. Timekeeper, thank you. Please keep us on track.
If there is a station that is having some difficulties or they have a bill that they want to catch up on or an aged payable, then they will give us a call and say, we would rather than pay central services this month, we would like to be able to use that money for something else. And then we will say, sure, go ahead, because it's more important than you get, you know, caught up on this kind of thing. So WBAI, for example, we've waived their central service payments over the last month because they had some outstanding personnel costs that need to be paid based upon the some union wages that need to be raised and then back paid, those kind of things. They also had some air conditioning issues or something that, you know, so we prioritize in working with the general managers or business managers on a regular basis, almost daily, as to what bills can be paid and what bills cannot be paid. We haven't raised the central services for KPFK because even though they have a bank balance with their, with the bequest that they got, I still kind of view them as a struggling station at this point, and I don't want to bombard them by taking the full percentage of central service payments. They have personnel things they need to work on. They have a lot of repairs that need to happen at the tower. They have a transmitter capital campaign repair fund that is going on right now. We have some matching funds that were put in that account. And as you can see, too, on the list, we set up a separate account for them for that transmitter repair. So any money that comes in gets automatically put into that since it's restricted. So we are in constant contact with what's being paid and what's not being paid. KPFA, for example, they have an automatic bill pay. So
The ED is covering great portion of her report. So we're advancing the cause. I think we can move on to governance.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that, you know, okay, so you send them and you say, okay, this is what we'd like you to pay. That's what we'd like you to pay. And they say, well, you know, we can pay this, but we don't want to pay that. What I'm asking, is there a dedicated invoice that goes to each unit each month so that someone else, not somebody who's involved in the conversation, that says, oh, I want to pay this instead of that, but someone else can look at that invoice in 6 months or 6 years and understand exactly what the station was built for, that there are no, you know, surprise bill backs that are just appearing.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let me just note that Kaja, we have been joined by Kaja Brown. Kaja, would you be kind to speak?
I'm hearing whoever sends out the notices, please remember Arizona doesn't observe daylight time. That's what threw me off. Because it said 6:30 was the start. And then I looked at it again and I was like, oh, no.
Never mind. I'm not going to make a snide remark about Arizona. I love Arizona. Julie.
Yes, point well taken. So on the governance committee report, we met on July 24th. We set up a procedure for electing chair and secretary of the committee. We didn't do a whole lot other real business at the meeting, but, you know, we had a robust discussion about, you know, how to pull that off. There are 7 directors on the committee, one from each of the 5 stations, an affiliate rep and PMB chair. As we were talking about nominating people for chair and secretary, the question came up about whether a non-committee member could run for chair as a non-voting member. And I haven't had a chance to send an email to the governance committee yet, but it would seem that this is possible. So first I looked to our bylaws and they don't specify, they talk a bit about what committees we have to have and who's on the committees. They don't specify how we or who can be elected chair. So when our bylaws are unclear on a point, then we look to Robert's rules. And Robert's rules, okay, I have this section up here. Robert's rules in section, chapter 50, section 12 says, it is possible for persons who are not members of the assembly or the society to be appointed to committees, even to the position of committee chair, but control over such appointment is reserved to the assembly in the individual case. And so the way I interpret that last, you know, appointment is reserved to the assembly in the individual case means the governance committee deciding for the governance committee. And so it seems to me that non-committee members are eligible and that the elections themselves would figure out the, you know, the result of is someone who's not a member of the committee chair or not. So, but I didn't see anything that prohibited a non-committee member from being elected or nominated and or elected to be the chair. So, and we set up another meeting and the next meeting was going to be after the elections process was concluded. And I believe perhaps that is August 21st. I think that was when we set up the next meeting for, but that part of my homework I didn't do before this meeting. I'm sorry. So,
but I think the Secretary Pro Tem is about to send out a reminder about nominations. I think she'll send it out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions for governance? Okay. Next is Kaja. You're up. Maybe a combination of you and Stephanie, because I know she just made a big presentation to the affiliates. Kaja, are you ready to give an affiliates report?
Sure. Is Jerome not here?
It apparently not. Does he have the not daylight savings time excuse that you do?
No, he's on standard time or whatever time you guys are on. Hold on 1 second. I just want to forward this to the PNB so that they have it since folks like to ask.
I attached it to the ED report, so they have it attached to there.
Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is the August report, affiliate network report. Ursula says we're on track in terms of finances with the operation fiscal goals for 2025. She says the affiliate unit remains in the black, meeting budgeted expenses, expanding slightly with one new affiliate in the last month for a total of 7 new affiliates to date this year. The projected total income will be approximately $7,000 higher than the previous fiscal year. We've collected 80% of 2025 revenue from affiliate fees, projected income from 2025 fees, $240,000 received so far, $191,770. Collected affiliate fees overdue from previous years, $16,752. Out of projected $6,000 in donations, we've received $6,083. Out of projected $8,000 in grants, we've received $10,377. Total revenue for the fiscal year to date is $225,000. Subscriptions to the internet technology services provided by the network unit have increased by $6,000 from the previous fiscal year. IT revenue is now 10% of the total affiliate fees. David Klan of Broadcast Tool and Die provides IT support to subscribers. There is a grassroots radio conference note in here. Pacifica affiliate unit staff will attend the GRC, which is happening September 11th through the 14th in Spokane. I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Spokane.
I've heard it said both ways, but anyway, we'll go with your pronunciation. Hosted by Pacifica affiliate KYRS, the affiliate unit office has been assisting organizers at KYRS with various planning aspects of the conference. and is the official sponsor for the keynote speaker at the conference, who is FCC Commissioner Ana Gomez. At the conference, we'll lead several workshops, participate in a panel, and hold our Pacifica Affiliate Network lunch, hosted by the Association of Affiliates. Solidarity statement. Last month, Stephanie Wells, our ED, put out a statement of solidarity between Pacifica affiliates and other possible partnering media groups. We currently have approximately 12 signatories, from affiliates and also the Association of Affiliates on today. Oh, he was just noting that today Stephanie gave a presentation and led discussion about Project 2025, and I sat in on that as well. Pacificaster, the first test affiliate, our first test affiliate station client for Pacificaster, which is the podcast hosting website, has successfully created an account. During the next month, we'll sign up a few test clients and work with a testing service for debugging. Response to CPB cuts. Quite understandably, we've received a lot of questions about how many in our network are suffering from funding cuts. We are in the process of researching this, and hopefully by the end of September, we'll have a full accounting. At this time, we have not been notified that any affiliates plan to cut Pacifica from their budgets, although we will have a better accounting by September 30th. And then finally, there's a note about the newest affiliate of Pacifica being on the African continent. And Jerome, who's our other affiliate representative, is in the process of signing up an affiliate in Ghana. We welcome the return of connection to that part of the world. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the station's name right, but Radio Guruni, I think is how it's pronounced, is a rural station, active community support, supporter and progressive active community. That's written weird, but anyway, I think she's saying that it's an active supporter of community and progressive causes in that community. And they've recorded an interview with Jerome, who is actively involved and will be traveling to Ghana to help out at the station. And we'll be posting that interview on PacificaNetwork.org, along with an upcoming interview with Lydia Jono, Radio Guruni's station manager. And that is the end of the report.
What an exciting report. I wanted to ask Minerva, you had your hand up. Did you want to ask a question? We'll go to Myla, Serene, and then Minerva, if Minerva wants to ask. Myla?
On a silly note, I'd like to vote for Can. Thank you.
So say it like a can.
That's the only way I've heard it pronounced.
Okay. See, I've always heard it the other way.
Cool.
Maybe that's the way they say it in Arizona.
No, that's how they pronounced it when I lived in Portland.
Well, Portland maybe has it out for Spokane. Serene.
Hey, Akadra. Question. How many affiliates do we have right now, roughly?
Ooh, I don't know off the top of my head, but I can find out before the end of the meeting.
Okay, because I've been hearing 240, 250, and now 210. So I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, let me. I think Ursula just sent me the most recent affiliate. What do you call it? Report or annual
roster?
Report. Yeah,
roster.
Well, it's whatever the binded thing is that she sends out. She's a PDF of that, I think. I saw that in my email. But I can find that out for you before the end of the meeting.
Okay, cool. My other question is, I always understood that most of our affiliate stations didn't qualify for CPB money anyway, although I'm sure, you know, there's overlap between some stations, because I see some of the affiliate stations run both NPR programming and Pacifica programming. So do you have any idea what percentage of our stations are even CPB?
I don't know the total number, but I don't think not that many. The only one that I know of was KUNM in Albuquerque. But they're okay. In a unique situation because they're also the NPR affiliate for Albuquerque.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
To the best of my knowledge, none of the newer stations were CPB recipients. There might have been a few native stations that are also Pacifica affiliates that were receiving funding, but like my station in Phoenix wasn't receiving funding.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Number six is discussion on whether disciplinary hearings can be held in open session. Julie, will you please address this question?
Sure.
Wait. So, I'm sorry. Did we blow through the ED's report time?
That comes afterwards. That's number seven.
Okay, great. Cool. Thanks.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the first thing I wanted to point out is the intent of this conversation is to be generic and not include specifics of the hearing that when Susan read the report out, suggested would be held in executive session next week. And so, that keeping this high level, and not specific to that, though obviously, you know, the question has sort of come up in surrounding that particular hearing. So the first thing, is, you know, again, you look to the bylaws first to see if we say anything in particular about whether these things have to be, whether, you know, something it is a policy or procedure of the foundation, and it's not in our bylaws that disciplinary hearings are held in executive session. So then you go and you look at Robert's Rules, and Robert's Rules is actually pretty clear on this. Robert's Rules says, no, that you must hold disciplinary hearings in executive session. Not only do you hold executive hearings in disciplinary session, any the bringing of a motion to hold a disciplinary hearing also must only be taken up in executive session. You know, a couple of other points that Robert's Rules makes is that disciplinary hearings are not legal proceedings, and so they don't follow the same exact procedures that you'd expect to find observed in a court of law. The reason for holding disciplinary matters in executive session is because the member may be found not guilty, and in that case, people outside of the PMB, you know, would have no reason to be privy to, you know, the matter at all. And so, you know, that's one point. The other thing that is true is that in some instances, you know, and I'm just speaking generically here again, in some instances it could be that a case is brought because somebody decided that someone who's an office holder, you know, chair, treasurer, et cetera, did something that was inappropriate for their position. And so the case is about removing that individual from their position as an officer. And in some cases, it does become necessary to reveal aspects of the outcome of a hearing. If in fact somebody is removed as an officer of the foundation, well, then you have a vacancy in that officer position, and then you have to go through the process to fill that vacancy. But in no circumstance, are you supposed to, you know, reveal any more than is absolutely necessary, you know, because one of the things we need to be worried about as a society, that's the word that Robert's Rules uses all the time, is by making, you know, the details of the case public, it could constitute libel. And a trial by the society can't legally establish guilt of anyone as understood in a court of law, only guilt in the sense of the society's judgment. A lot of this is found in Robert's Rules in section 63, in case folks listening at home want to look this up and understand a little bit more for themselves. And I think that's sort of the high level points that I wanted. Oh, finally, the other thing that I wanted to point out is, again, as I suggested, Robert's rule says that not only do you hold the hearing in closed session, but if you have had passed a motion that says you're going to hold a hearing, that motion can only be considered in closed session. And so without revealing, what happened in closed session, I will simply note that, it's conceivable that a motion would have said that we would have a hearing in closed session. And so if the motion says something like that, then, obviously the body would have to revisit the motion in the first place to do that. And then I guess the final point I wanted to make was, sometimes, again, speaking sort of generically here, some of the matters that may come up may be things that happened in executive session. And if the things happened in executive session, then, obviously the discussion would be about matters that are confidential. And so that's another important thing for the body, to protect the deliberations of confidential sessions of the body. So that's what I wanted to say to sort of kick this off, Susan. I don't know if people have, but it looks like there's a bunch of hands. I don't know if you want to.
Absolutely. I think this is an important matter. A lot of people have, obviously have questions. James, Donna, Dennis, Serene. James Sagerton, you're first.
Usually and I admit I have not read Section 63 recently, but usually I hear the, policy about confidentiality in these kinds of matters couched in terms of protecting the privacy of the defendant. It's not a trial target or subject of the hearing, if you will. And so I can see that there may be policy reasons for also wanting to protect witnesses and their testimony. But I'm wondering what the upshot is when a subject of one of these hearings decides to publicize what's happening on their own behalf or on their own initiative, if you will.
Julie, will you answer that, please?
Yeah, that's a good question. Roberts doesn't really talk about that specific instance, but it doesn't seem to leave the door open to holding a hearing in open session. One of the things it says is, and this is in a section called Rights of the Society and the Accused, so both sides have rights, and so a society has the right to investigate character of its members and officers, blah, blah, blah. But it goes on to say neither the society nor any member has the right to make public any information obtained through an investigation. And I think, a lot of this, surrounds the fact that it's not a court of law. And because it's not a court of law, how do I say this? If it's people who are amateurs, not trained in the law, holding the, and Roberts does give lots of procedures about exactly how you're supposed to do this. And it's difficult to follow all of those procedures, but nonetheless, I think it's sort of this sense that, because it's sort of amateurs who are running the show, if you will, that, you don't want to, people who are, this is not their day job, that really you should not reveal what's going on. And Roberts very clearly says, consequently, and I'm reading verbatim here, consequently, a trial must always be held in executive session, as must the introduction and consideration of all resolutions leading up to the trial. So I'm done reading now. So I hear your point, James, but I feel like, there are aspects that are meant to protect both the society as well as the accused, and the accused, can't necessarily waive secrecy and confidentiality, as it were, because that might trample on the rights of the society.
If I may just briefly.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, James.
I was not trying to make a point. I was just asking the question because, you know, then what do we do with information that we may get when a subject of an investigation makes that kind of information public? And, you know, then our own confidentiality agreements say that, you know, if we obtain information from other sources, then we can discuss it publicly. But so I'm wondering how we handle the fact that a subject might make things public. So I'll study Section 63 again, and we'll work on it. Thank you.
Yep.
Donna Carter, then Dennis, then Serene. Donna.
Okay. This is more a general question, but can someone who's been around for a while say approximately how many disciplinary hearings have come before this board? And how many of them, no names here, we're not talking about privacy here. How many were acquitted?
So Julie, do you, so if I could, I'm responding, Donna, to your question, although I may not be complete. When I first served on the PNB recently, in 2022, there were three actions brought. One, I believe, guilt was not assigned, or at least there was no penalty. One was found guilty and there was suspension. And a third basically withdrew and resigned. Julie, there were more. I know you conducted a bundle of trials, if you will. Can you recap the ones and the outcomes?
I have to admit, I try to like block that part of my brain out because they're not fun. I can't give you an exact count. I think I know the ones that Susan's speaking of, cause I was on the PNB at the same time as well. There have been an additional small number. I don't remember the exact number. I think there have been times where, the body has, brought charges, you know, passed a motion in executive session to bring charges. And, you know, as Susan alluded, you know, sometimes it can be resolved without there actually being a hearing. I don't remember all the resolutions, but one thing I will say is, and this is out of the Pacifica bylaws, if someone is to be removed, and this is, you know, the 2020 bylaws as well as the 2025 bylaws, if someone is to be removed, it requires a 2/3 vote. And let me just say, also because we've done this, at my LSB, you know, while I have been an LSB member, and not very many times, but a small number of times, and it's a really high hurdle to get 2/3 of people to agree on something. And so as I said, what our bylaws say is removal, whether it's of an LSB member or a director, removal requires a 2/3 vote. So that's a pretty high hurdle. And so at any rate, that is in fact one reason that sometimes suspension occurs, because it does not require, suspension is less than removal, and so it doesn't require the same 2/3 vote. It requires a majority vote.
Madam Chair, we have gone over this allotted time.
So I think this is a very important matter. Is there any objection to extending to exhaust the stack? Hearing none. Serene, then Mila.
Madam Chair, there is a 30 minutes until time certain.
Got it. For going to executive session, is that correct?
Yes.
All right, please continue. Serene. And Myla had her hand up. I don't know if she wants to have a question or not. Serene, go ahead.
Thanks. So, you know, there have been occasions where there's no quote removal, but the suspension is so severe and long lasting that it's tantamount to a removal. But anyway, my question is, if let's say that the acts of which the person were accused were committed in public, and the person has said, "I waive any right to privacy that could exist," why would there need to be a secret discussion of a public act?
So again, yeah. Let me first respond to the point that Serene made a moment ago about suspensions equivalent to removal. And I will just say that every time that I've been a part of one of these hearings, the body has always acted, you know, in an above board way, in the sense of, I'm not saying that nobody ever thought of the idea of, oh, this person has 2 years remaining on their term, let's suspend them for 24 months. I'm not going to suggest that that thought never crossed anyone's mind and never, you know, got put on the floor. But basically, there have always been directors who, or delegates who would stand up and say, no, wait, the only way we can do that is, since that is tantamount to a removal, is if we have a two-thirds vote. And if we don't have the two-thirds vote, then you have to suspend for less than the remaining time, right? Okay, so your question about did the act happen in public? So one thing I will say is, well, what Robert's Rules distinguishes in terms of disciplinary matters is they distinguish between things that happen in meetings, so can be meetings or LSB meetings, right? And so a member can be called out for behavior that occurs in a meeting, and typically that is a different part of Robert's Rules, and you deal with the behavior, you know, in real time, and then you move on. The notion that someone does something outside of a meeting, right? So it could be a public event, but if it's outside of a meeting, that's when the process that you go through is this process that's basically laid out in Section 63 of Roberts, Chapter 63. So, you know, I mean, it's, is it perfect? I don't know that I would say that it was perfect, but, you know, it's what our bylaws say we do, is we follow Robert's Rules when our bylaws are unclear on a particular matter. And it seems that Robert's Rules is pretty clear about this. And again, I go back to the fact that really what's happening is it's not meant to be, you know, mimic a court of law. It can't really establish guilt as would be understood in a legal context. And I think because of that, that's the sense in which you're protecting everyone's best interest by not making that public.
I am after the stack, but one of the things I'd like to respond to Donna's previous question. Julie, as then chair of the board, conducted several of these disciplinary procedures. And the procedure that has been outlined in the motion that was adopted by the board is consistent with the precedent established in all these prior proceedings. And some of the matters that were addressed, in fact, occurred in public. So we are following, I mean, the board in making its decision is following precedent. Okay, we exhausted the stack. I apologize that I added on, but I wanted to more fulsomely answer Donna's question. The next item up is the executive director report. Stephanie, will you be kind to give the report? And I want to make sure that you included in your report some things about the Project 2025 presentation that you made to affiliates that was excellent.
Sure, thank you. I'll just give highlights from the report because everybody has it in front of them. One of the things that is included and the materials again are attached to the ED report is that we did provide to our stations and affiliates a set of materials in response to the defunding of public media that happened in May, the executive order that was issued to direct the CPP to stop federal funding to NPR and PBS, and they'll be stripping about $1.1 billion for fiscal year 26 and 27, and the CPP is slowly sort of closing up in preparation for that. But we did create a specific position on the defunding of public media by Congress. And one of the things that was sent out to everyone, as I said, our stations and our affiliates, was a public statement that can be put on their websites or can be sent out in an email communication, pre-recorded PSA that is airing on some of the stations, and then also provided suggested copy if some of the stations wanted to do a social media campaign, and then also a sample fundraising email that's stressing the importance of supporting community radio. And today in the conversation that we had with the affiliates group, they had asked me to speak about this Project 2025 and what now, basically. And this, again, was something that I had written for the stations to look at and use if they wanted when the president was first put into place. And it was basically a 10-page document that we'll be sending out now to the affiliate stations that is just different things that they can do to educate the public about Project 2025, to keep it in the forefront of our listeners' minds, letting them realize, because it's so easy to have so many different topics that are coming at us all at the same time, but it included basically a way that the stations could create a radio campaign, and that included a series, an outline for a 6-part series, roughly 30 to 60 minutes in length. It's kind of a documentary interview, call-in hybrid type style, and gave them an episode breakdown for the first series if they wanted to do that. And then also sample messaging toolkit that they could use in their social media and in emails, a sample public service announcement, different hashtags that they could use again, and then a sample of an infographic or a one sheet that they could put on their station's websites just to keep people informed about Project 2025. And one of the things that a lot of people sort of work questioning and have asked me about, even from the affiliate standpoint, is, you know, what is the likelihood of the administration revoking any licenses of non-commercial radio stations? And so I kind of went over that. Basically, is that there, you know, that hasn't happened so far. That doesn't necessarily mean that that isn't going to happen, but really encouraging the stations, our own 5 stations, and then also our affiliates, just to make sure that they're following all the rules that they can with FCC and just being on top of any sort of underwriting and defamation, any sort of obscenities that go across the line or across the air. And if you, just like we do here, if we find that something like that has happened, that we immediately document it, talk to the general manager, the program director, the programmer itself, and let them know that this was, you know, in violation. And if this happens again, you know, what the consequence will be. So then that way, if we are questioned by the FCC or another party about what we're doing, we can say we were aware of this and we make changes. And then also, just for my own, I just keep it on my phone as a just in case to be prepared, are kind of the steps of what we should do just in case we do run into some issue with an FCC license being revoked. And again, I'm not anticipating that to happen, but it's always good to be prepared. So I am sending all of this information out also to our affiliates that just kind of gives an immediate steps of what you can do, near-term strategy, long-term options, and again, any sort of messaging. So it's a wonderful group that the affiliates put together, and they have different key speakers every month, and it's great to sort of see everybody. One of the things that we're doing as well is that we are nearing the launch of a new suite of apps for Pacifica, and we are working on individual apps for each of our stations, an app for the archives, a general Pacifica Foundation app that would have live feeds and links to all of our stations, a Pacifica Evening News app, which would pull in news feeds from all of our stations and our affiliates, and then we're debating to a dedicated podcast app that's built around Pacificaster, which we had talked about earlier. So in the ED report, you can just kind of get a little bit of the technicalities of what's going on and how that's working, and the person that is building these apps for us, and he has been working on a prototype for KPFT and has been going extremely well. And so in conversations with Sandy and Otis, they then connected him to me because I was talking to some other companies to run this, and since this is a person that has been building this and doing this already for us, it was nice to be able to just keep it in-house. So there's a lot of the apps right now are just in test flight mode. And then as soon as one of the station's apps is getting closer to being, not finalized, but different things, the bugs and sort of the working on it as it's being worked on, we pull in the general manager so they can take a look at it and make sure that they, it's doing what they want to do. So Sandy has been working on that with KPFT. We just pulled in Miyuki today to look at the PFW app, and there's just some screenshots of again what some of these apps look like and what they look like on the phone or on a tablet, and that is in the EDA report as well. So hopefully they'll be launched very quickly. We're still moving forward extremely well with the Archives Legacy project. We are still in the process of updating the Radio Pacifica Radio Archives website. And the site right now is in beta testing and it's under review. We have a link for it, but I didn't want to send it out because it still is very much in review. So as soon as we have some more of those pages done, then I will send that out or put it in the ED report for people to be able to take a look at it. But what we're trying to do is we are updating the website and transitioning to a WordPress platform. So it just has improved functionality and ease of use. The site had not been updated or backed up or maintained for quite a few years. And so that was one of our priorities to make sure that we have a good landing page for the archives website. We've so far have shipped out over about 783 boxes that contain approximately 20,000 tapes and CDs for digitization. 10,000 of those right now are being worked on. There's been approximately 2,000 of them that have been completed. I also sent the link to the company that's doing that digitization if anybody is so interested. And then right now, the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, who we're partnering with this digitization process, is currently hosting, they've been able to put up 3,500 digitized Pacifica Foundation audio recordings that are available for public or restricted use. If anybody is using it for licensing, then it links back to us, and then we can talk to them about licensing agreements. So we've been working on some licensing agreements already based upon the things that are up there. An additional 1,800 recordings are done, but they're undergoing legal review through the AAPB in order to determine the copyright status and to make sure that we are able to use them. So if you want to explore the Pacifica materials, there's a link inside the ED report, which is AmericanArchive.org, and all you do is have to enter Pacifica Foundation in the search bar, and then that will link you to what's up there. One of the highlights in going through all of these boxes is that our team was able to identify and catalog 4,345 tapes that had been undocumented, which is great because there were materials that we didn't even know that we had. So there's still hundreds of other boxes that need to be cataloged. We had two storage facilities and they finished with one, and now they're in the process of moving over to another. The number of tapes that have been cataloged, just out of curiosity, we had 1,537 new tapes that were cataloged from KPFA, 892 for WBAI, 1,533 for KPFK, 60 from WPFW, and then we found over 200 on the Watergate hearings. We have found that there's been a limited number of tapes from KPFT. We're not quite too sure why. Either the archive material was lost or it was never submitted to the Pacifica archives. But we did find that there were some Ray Hill papers cows. They were donated by someone to the University of Houston, and that collection primarily consists of letters from Texas prison inmates to Ray Hill during his time as host of the prison show on KPFT. So the link for that collection as well is also in the ED report. And also highlighting there just some of the cleaning, some of the pictures before and after that the team sends to me, or if I'm out there visiting what they're doing in the storage units, that's just, just kind of nice to see this massive project that's going on. And it's just a wonderful team that we have that are through the national office that we're paying. And then we got a grant to pay for interns that specialize in library sciences and cataloging. So they've been diligently working on doing this as well. Also, the Solidarity Pact that we had talked about before, the Standing Together for Free Media and Democracy that was shared with the affiliate network of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters and Convention at the convention in Salt Lake City. That's also attached, so you can take a read at that. And there are all the affiliate stations are agreeing to it and signing it. And it really, what it's really trying to support is that making sure that all of the stations and the affiliates in particular feel that they are a part of the Pacifica Foundation. We are all part of the same team and we are here. Basically, we have your back. So when the affiliates may feel that they are out on an island or they're getting harassed or their funding is disappearing, that they can turn to us for support, whether that be letters of support, advocacy, help them with any fundraising that may need to be done, because we are all part of the Pacifica family. So that's really what that is for. We're still moving forward with the general manager interviews. We have roughly 3 applicants that were for KPFA, 3 for KPFA, 7 for KPFK, 7 for WPFW, 6 for WBAI, and 1 that was unspecified. They just said they'd work anywhere. I have been phone interviewing all of them and then moving them through the process if they meet some of the qualifications or the criteria, they have the experience. The job posting again is attached, and any interested individuals should send their resume and cover letter to hr@pacifica.org. Questions?
Is my hand up?
Serena, I don't think so, but let me note you. I've got some questions. I'll ask one and then come back around. So it's me, Myla, James, Serene, and then back to me. My question is, and then Jan, I'll come after everybody else. Stephanie, I think you said that you had given a PowerPoint or slide presentation to the affiliates. Can you share that with all PNB members?
Yes, I can. I will also attach the paperwork that goes with it, because my PowerPoint usually when I give PowerPoints, it's not a PowerPoint that you sit and you read exactly what you've said. It's just kind of highlights to give people's eyes some place to go rather than just your face. So I will attach the PowerPoint and the document that goes along with it and send that out.
Okay. Myla, then James, then Serene, then Jan.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. I'm particularly excited about the progress we've been making on the Archives Legacy Project. About 20 years ago, on behalf of the Pacifica Archives, I recorded a talk with a couple of Israeli refuseniks who traveled to this country to tell us about how they and one of them was a high-ranking person in the Israeli army who was refusing to go into the occupied territory and harass Palestinian people. And I'm hoping to find that in the archives, and I think that it could be very useful today. But my questions it's my understanding that right now the focus is primarily on getting the taped inventory digitized, but we also have a tremendous amount of really valuable programming that came later, and I'm hoping, and I think we've had this conversation before, but I'm hoping that there's actually a plan in place for a next phase once this very ambitious project has gotten underway, that we can think in terms of including in our catalog
3 seconds, Myla.
Programming that from Pacifica stations that succeeded after the initial legacy project.
Please wrap up. Your 30 seconds.
Do you understand that, Stephanie?
Yes, and that's what we're working on with the website. So we have the team that is doing the physical CDs and the tapes and the paper goods that need to be saved and preserved. But then we also have the person that is working on the website, which means also going into the hard drives and the shared or the you know, I don't know the technology, so forgive my naivete, but everything that should be just recorded onto a hard drive. There were stacks and stacks of them, not well maintained. And so it's digging into them and making sure that we have things that were recorded, that they were preserved. And thankfully, Otis has a lot of backups of everything. So we're having to go through those as well. And this is where interns also come into play because they are experts in archiving and library sciences and archiving. So we're here as well.
Can I just follow up and ask, for example, California Solartopia has recordings.
I'm sorry.
That Otis is preserved.
Point of order.
Sorry, yeah, Myla, come back to the end of the stack, okay? James, then Serene, then Jan, then me, then Myla. James.
Thank you, I'll try to be quick. There's always this question of the board theoretically sets policy and then management executes it. And I think, you know, in general, management understands what the policies are and follows them generally. And if the board sees anything that they are unhappy with, then they speak up and things get adjusted if necessary. So I'm hoping that before we come out with major editorial positions on things like Project 25 and CPV funding, et cetera, that we might float some of that past the board. I'm sure maybe some of the officers saw some of that. But we might pass the board before we go on the air with it, just as a good precedent. There's nothing that I heard that I really disagree with or that I think, you know, really stood out as somehow not in keeping with Pacifica policy. But someday there might be an ED or someone who wants to say something that is very disagreeable, and we wouldn't want that to get out before we've had a chance to look at it. So anyway, just suggesting that as we go ahead with these things and policies become, and situations in the country become tenser, we might want to have some more discussions about these things. And then second, real quick, I know we had discussions about what's happening with the tapes. Originally, we weren't going to retain the original tapes, but then we agreed that we would retain the original tapes.
Fine, James.
So I'm just wondering, how are we handling it? Damaged tapes, partial tapes, will they be retained for possible further work and, you know, James, possibly even finding other sources for missing parts.
Can you wrap that up? Definitely. I think she has enough in hand to answer.
Yes. Everything will be returned back to us. And even if something was not able to be digitized because of it being in poor quality, we will still save it with hopes and anticipation that they may have a process that we are unaware of.
Good. Thank you. That's what the policy was. I just want to make sure it's a thing. Thank you.
Serene, then Jan, then back to me and back to my list. Serene?
Okay. We do have a time-sensitive, it's much more than 20 minutes, but we do have a time-sensitive motion with regard to bylaw amendments. So I would like us to agree to extend the open session by 15 minutes.
Is there a second to extending the open session by 10 minutes?
A second.
Okay. Is there any objection? I object. So it requires I think that because it's before that time, certain, it requires a 50% vote. So, Madam Secretary, will you take the vote? If you vote yes, you are voting to extend by 10 minutes. If you vote no, you're voting to stay
with the 10 o'clock, end time ET. Sorry, I'm advised that because we have to change the agenda, because we've already run past the time, it requires a 2/3 vote. So, will the secretary take the roll? Once again, yes, if you want to extend by 10 minutes. No, if you do not want to extend open session by 10 minutes.
All right. Kaja Brown?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Ron.
Before we take this vote, that item is on the agenda for 15 minutes, right?
Yes, thank you for, yes, it is.
Then why not just extend for 15 minutes and call it a day?
There's an objection to extending. There's an objection to extending.
I understand. So we'll take the vote, but I'm just saying, can we put that on the table that, the vote is to extend, to give them its full time at 15 minutes?
No. So, Serene, you made the motion. I realize that this isn't the right thing to do, but do you object to the vote being about 15 minutes rather than 10?
I said 15.
I'm sorry, I misheard it. I said 15. I misheard it. That's okay. I thought you said 10, and if you're correcting me that it's 15, great. You vote yes, we extend open session by 15. You vote no. And we do not extend open session. We go straight to executive session at the time specified.
All right. Kaja Brown.
Okay, so this is extending what? The discussion that's
open session.
Open session, yes. In order to
yes.
Address item number... nine.
I vote yes.
Eight and nine.
I vote yes.
Vote yes.
Yes.
Okay. Kaja Brown's a yes. Donna Carter?
Yes.
Donna's a yes. We don't have Jerome Edge, right? So Sally Gellert?
Yes.
Sally's a yes. Jan Goodman?
You're muted, Jan. Jan, you're still muted.
No.
Jan's a no. Julie, I'll pass. That's okay. Jan Goodman's a no. Julie's passing. Avalia Jones?
No.
Avalia's a no. Zach Colvere?
No.
Zach is a no. Philip Muldery?
Philip, are you still here and are you muted? I don't see him. I think he's not here anymore.
Okay. I'll keep going. Marianne Martinez?
Yeah.
Marianne's a yes. Sean Kelly McPherson?
No.
Sean is a no. Ron Pinchback?
Yes.
Ron is a yes. Myla Reason?
No.
Myla's a no. Serene Roberts?
Yes.
Serene is a yes. James Sagerton? I'm sorry, James, I didn't quite, I sort of heard, but didn't. James is a yes? Okay. Minerva Sanders?
No.
Minerva's a no. Alex Steinberg's not here. Harvey Wasserman?
No.
Harvey's a no. Dennis Williams?
Yes.
Dennis is a yes. Michael Woodson?
No.
Michael is a no. Let me back up the top. So it's Julie Hewitt. You passed. I'm going to abstain. We still don't have Philip. We don't have Alex. Madam Chair, the yeses are 8 and the noes are 8. Do you wish to vote?
I vote no.
Chair is a no, so that makes it the yeses are 8 and the noes are 9, so the motion fails.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to welcome Jerome Edge to our meeting.
Jerome, would you be kind to speak up? Well, maybe he came and went. All right. We are...
Madam Chair, timekeeper, clarification. Yes. There were still another 5 minutes on item 7, and then item 8 and 9, and we have 3 minutes till time certain.
So, we'll continue then with the questions for the ED. Jan?
I think I'm next.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I have 2 questions for Stephanie.
Okay, we'll come after Jan.
Jan? I haven't had a chance to ask my questions yet.
We'll come after Jan.
I was next.
All right, Jan, please forgive me. I have, sorry for the confusion. Yes, Serene. Then Jan, then me, then Myla, then James Sagerton.
Thank you, Stephanie. So I'm concerned about the GM jobs because, as I pointed out in my email to you on July 30th, the deadline, which was supposed to have been changed to August 15th, was never changed. So the website is still saying the positions closed on July 30th, which means for the past week, anyone looking at the website wouldn't bother to apply. So I hope, you know, considering that error that was unaddressed, although noticed, I hope that you will extend till the end of the month. Today, right now, you can go. It still says July 30th.
Okay, yeah, the updated job description was forwarded to be put up on the website, so I can make accommodations for that extra week, no problem. And I'll change the date then and send it back.
Well, can you just do it to the end of the month? Because now people who won't necessarily be going back to the, you know.
Sure.
Appreciate that. The other question was with regard to the translators that you were going to get rid of. What is the status?
I can get a report on that from John, our compliance officer, and our FCC attorney is working on that. So I can get a report from him and send that out.
Okay, before the next meeting, right?
Correct.
Okay, Jan, then James, and that will exhaust the stack. Jan.
I have 2 questions. One is if you can tell us how much is in the KPFK account, more or less. And the second one is, what is your planned procedure regarding hiring the GM for KPFK? And also, what's the timeline, if you can share that? I mean, if you can share any of those things.
Yeah, the bank balance is on the ED report.
Okay.
It's always listed, and including that is also the transmitter repair fund, which is a separate account that we've set up for them for those restricted funds for that campaign. And then they're following the same timeline as KPFK for the GM search, as is every other station. So we will extend that through the end of August.
And what's the procedure once you interview the people?
All 7 applicants for KPFK have been interviewed already by me, and now I'm just going to move everybody onto the next stage, which would involve other people getting involved in the interview process.
Can you,
Madam Chair? We are at time.
Explain that more.
Yeah, Jan, she has explained it before. Can she talk to you offline about it?
Sure. Sure.
Okay, James, and then I'm suggesting we exhaust the stack with James, and then we will have a 5-minute break and move to go into executive session. So, James,
this is just a quick comment. Sometimes we talk about the affiliates as if we own them. We talk about, you know, we're all on the same team, we're part of the Pacifica Network. I just want to make it clear for some that may be listening and even members who sometimes get the wrong impression. We do not own the affiliates. They are independently, separately owned, signals and stations, but that we are, they're a part of the Pacifica Network by virtue of the fact that they pay a fee for the use of some of our programming. That's how that functions, but we don't own them. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Okay. Is there a motion to go into closed session?
So moved. Jen Goodman.
Thank you. It's already on the agenda, so I think no second is required. We will now go into closed session, and I'm going to suggest we take a 5-minute break and then come back for that agenda.